Blog Talk Radio.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome to Reflecting His Gifts. I'm Sissy Ellison, your host, and I believe that everyone has a God-given purpose, a gift or a talent, a testimony of grace that is meant to impact this world for the good and bring glory and honor to God. I also believe, as Romans 8:28 tells us, that all things, even the bad stuff, work together for the good of those who've been called according to God's purposes. God is famous for making lemonade out of lemons, giving hope to the hopeless, using the foolish to confound the wise, and even using our worst pain and losses to make us stronger, to teach us important lessons, and then to use us as beacons of light as we comfort others who may encounter the same trials. One of the questions people most often ask God is why? Why do we have trials and tribulations, disappointments and pain? Often God doesn't answer except in His Word, where Jesus told us we would have pain and trials and disappointments in life. However, with this declaration, He promised to be with us through all of those terrible times, and that if we allowed our pain to work for us and not against us, He would make it all work out for our good. My guest this evening is Steve Collins. Steve is a gifted and talented man, a singer-songwriter. He's worked in advertising, but there was a big need in his life. Steve was in need of a new heart, literally. Steve had heart problems and was actually on a heart transplant list. He was hopefully waiting on a heart, and he got the call he had been waiting for. He received a new heart, but in the process became paralyzed and has remained that way ever since. Excuse me. Instead of becoming a hermit and a bitter man, Steve has submitted to his drastic life alteration and his paralysis with a strong spirit, a strong faith, and a great sense of humor. I believe laughter and a sense of humor combined with his faith in God have carried him through this unbelievable trial. He's going to share his life with us tonight, and I know someone will be listening who needs hope and encouragement from Steve Collins tonight. Welcome to Reflecting His Gifts, Steve.
Thanks, Sissy. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Steve, I'd love to paint a picture of my guest's life from the beginning. An up-and-close and personal picture of Steve Collins. Can we begin with your childhood, Steve? Would you share with us some of your early beginnings?
Sure. I was born in Wichita, Kansas, and didn't like it very much, so I left there at the age of 18 months and moved to Pasadena, Texas. My dad was in the service, so we moved around quite a bit as a kid. I know a lot of people whose dad is in the Navy, you know, moved to places like Pensacola, Florida, or Germany, or Hawaii, or Japan. I never got out of the central time zone. I have lived in such exotic ports of call as Omaha, Nebraska, and Lubbock, Texas. There's a lot of battleships going in and out of Omaha, Nebraska, and Lubbock, Texas. But anyway, at the time, I hated going around moving different places and having to make new friends and leave the old ones. But it has really been a blessing in my life to be able to use that in a professional career, being able to talk to anybody on any level. So I'm really thankful that that I was able to move around to be able to develop that into part of my personality.
Well, you saw a lot of the United States then. What was your favorite place that you did move to?
Well, I went to 3 high schools in 4 years.
And
the last 2 years of high school I spent in Slidell, Louisiana. And at the time I moved there from Omaha, Nebraska, it was a culture shock and didn't want to move there. I was going to live in Omaha, Nebraska and go to the University of Nebraska and be a Cornhusker, but that wasn't in the plans, so I moved to Slidell, and the first year, I went around with a frown on my face and just hated life and everybody, and, wasn't happy with anything, and I dated a girl for that year, and it wasn't. I shouldn't have dated the girl. Nothing wrong with the girl, a lovely girl, but I just needed to kind of, you know, start doing other things. So my senior year, I decided, you know what, I'm going to be happy for the rest of my life. I'm just not going to, you know, I'm only hurting myself.
It's not going to be an old grumpy thing anymore is what you decided, right?
It wasn't fun. It wasn't fun. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to have fun for the rest of my life. And it was just like a switch I turned. And I've been having fun ever since.
So that was a choice. We have a choice, don't we, to be an old grump or to be happy?
We do. And so in answer to your question, I call Slidell, Louisiana, home, even though I only lived there for 2 years.
Yeah. It's where you finally decided to be happy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, it's that age. The music is so much more important to me from that time. Those friends are so much more important at that time. You're coming of age. You are going through, you know, high school drama with all these people.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to go back to my 40-year high school reunion, and I can't wait to see these people again. They've been some of the best friends that I've kept through life.
Yeah. Well, was that the 70s?
It was. I graduated from high school in 1975.
Yeah, there was some good music during that time, wasn't there?
Some great music during that time.
Yeah, yeah. That's about my time, too. What were your hobbies and your favorite pastimes when you were young?
Well, I think in the eighth grade, I started collecting business cards.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a friend of mine that collected cards by the name of Roger Martz. And Roger had 8 business cards, and I thought, well, that's a pretty cool collection. So the next thing you know, I started collecting business cards. I had 16, and I showed them to Roger, and he said, here, take mine. No, I'm not going to collect them anymore. So I've been collecting them ever since, and I've got over 250,000 cards here at the house.
No, you don't. Oh, my word.
I do. Yeah, I mean, most of them are just everyday cards, but I've got, you know, celebrity cards and, you know, highfalutin cards, fancy cards, metal cards, wood cards, leather cards.
Where
it's
do you keep all of those? Where do you keep them all?
Well, much to my wife's chagrin, I keep them in my study in a couple of antique pieces that we've got. One is a British antique rail piece that used to hold train tickets in England in the 1880s. And the other is an American legal piece that was a legal drawer from the 1940s.
Wow. Those would be very interesting to look at sometime.
I bet
there's some really good cards in there. Well, what did you want to be when you grew up, Steve? What were your aspirations?
Well, when I was in high school, I thought, I took an aptitude test, and they said, well, you'd be good in sales. And at the time, I'm thinking, I don't want to sell TVs at Kmart. I mean, that was my sales was. I wanted to be a cop. I wanted to be a police officer until I found out how much money police officers make and what they do and lay their life on the line every day. And I thought, no, I'm not going to be a police officer. I'm going to be a lawyer. That's where the money is. So I go off to college, and the first year you can't declare a major. You've got to take all your core classes at that time. And then I found out if you wanted to be a lawyer, you needed to study political science. And I thought, I don't want to do that. So a friend of mine from high school that was also in college, she's going through the catalog. Remember they used to have those big 2-inch
Yes, I do. Yeah.
College catalogs that you went through. And she said, Steve, what about advertising? You'd be good in advertising. I said, do you have to have any math? And she said, nope. I said, well, I'm in advertising.
That's always a good deciding factor, isn't it, unless you're a genius in math, and I'm not either.
Right. So everything was fine until I met with the college of the Dean of Arts and Sciences, and he said, well, we've got a little problem here. And I'm thinking, oh, no, my credits aren't going to transfer? What's up with this? He said, if you're going to be in advertising, you need to learn that you don't spell it with a Z.
You have to what now?
You can't spell advertising with a Z.
Oh.
I spelled advertising wrong.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, that wasn't good.
Yeah.
So did you complete an education in that, or what did you do from there?
I did. I tell everybody I went to LSU, so I've got no formal education. I got a degree in journalism with a major in advertising, and worked myself through college and got out in 4 years.
Wow. Well, what did you do after? Where did you go to work? How did you use that education?
Well, one of my few A's in college was in selling advertising for the student newspaper, the Daily Helmsman.
Mm-hmm.
So I parlayed that into an interview with the Houston Post and went to work in Houston, Texas, selling newspaper advertising. And I was in Houston for about 6 years until we moved to Memphis.
Yeah. And what happened when you came to Memphis?
Well, I started to work at a TV station here. And after a couple different stations, I finally landed at the CBS affiliate. And worked there for, I think, about 12 years and eventually retired from Channel 3, from News Channel 3.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Steve, when did you first learn you had heart disease? When did that begin to manifest itself, and when did you learn you had that?
I guess before I learned I had heart disease, I learned I had hypertension, high blood pressure. I learned about that. One Sunday, we were in church, and the blood mobile was there. Life Blood was out in the parking lot, and the minister said, "Hey, if you want to go out and give blood, you can go do that." And I thought, well, I guess I can get out of a sermon by doing that. So I went out to the Life Blood truck. I go in there, and they tell me I've got high blood pressure. They couldn't get me out of that truck fast enough. And then the next couple of weeks, I made an appointment, and sure enough, I had high blood pressure, so I was treated for that.
Mm-hmm.
Then, I guess about 2002, I was having problems breathing. I had congestion. I had fluid around my heart, come to find out, which is what congestive heart failure is. But I was having trouble sleeping at night because of the congestion. I was having trouble breathing because of all of the pressure that the extra fluid was putting on my organs. And I ended up, this is right before Christmas, and I thought, like I do every year, you know what, I'm going to have to lose weight after the first of the year. Well, it got so bad, I couldn't even hand out presents at Christmas time. So everybody else was handing out presents. Here I am, the old man on the couch. And a couple days after Christmas, I went into the emergency room at 2 o'clock in the morning, went straight to the back, and they diagnosed me as having congestive heart failure, idiopathic cardiomyopathy, which means that they don't know what caused the congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm. So what happened after that? How did that affect your life and your physical activity, everything that you were doing previously?
Well, they had a plan to fix it. One of them, one of the plans was to give me a heart transplant. So I had to go through a series of tests. You don't just get on the heart transplant list. You get on the list to get on the heart transplant list. And in order to get on the heart transplant list, you have to go through a series of tests, lab tests, blood tests, meeting with nurses, doctors, social workers, a battery of tests, including meeting with a clinical psychologist, and lastly, taking the cardiopulmonary stress test. Well, I aced the cardiopulmonary stress test, so I was actually, my heart was actually too good to get a new heart. I tell people that. I think maybe I really failed the clinical psychology part of it, but I don't know. Anyway.
Probably did.
What they decided was that I needed to have a defibrillator. So they implanted a defibrillator in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the next 10 years, I went through three defibrillators. The battery goes dead after 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And instead of just replacing the battery, they replaced the whole defibrillator.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, after my
third defibrillator. Is that the normal practice? I thought sometimes they just replace the battery. Don't they do that?
That's not my understanding, Sissy. They replaced the whole unit. And
they
after
do,
the,
okay.
After the third implant, I was having some problems with a staph infection. That I think that happened in November of 2010, and then I had to go back in the hospital for the staph infection. And then over the course of that year, my condition kept worsening. So along about September, I was having problems similar to what I was having 10 years prior. Mm-hmm. And my wife would say, you know, why don't you go to the doctor? I said, Vicki, the problem here is I feel real bad right now, but by the time I get to the doctor, they're going to say, so what's the problem? And I said, well, you know, I feel fine now, but 45 minutes ago, it was nobody's business.
Right,
so
right,
one
right.
Sunday morning, we
Sissy?
Are headed to church.
Yeah.
Sissy, I'm going to interrupt you both for just a moment. We have a guest on the line, Tavon, who would like to speak with you.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Tavon,
hello.
Go ahead.
Hello. Hi. How is everyone?
Fine.
Great.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm blessed. Thank you. I guess at first I wanted to say, what is your name again, sir? The man who's talking?
My name is Steve Collins.
Peter Collins?
Mm-hmm.
Steve.
S-T-E-V-E.
Steve Collins. Right.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yes, it's very hard for me to hear in the climate I'm in. But yes, I guess I just wanted to say that I really enjoy your optimistic attitude and your positive outlook on life. I find your commentary very enlightening, and I've really enjoyed your wit so far. I've caught myself chuckling a couple of times. I'm really getting a lot out of it, and I'm inspired by your strength for dealing with the issues with your heart. That's very inspiring. So I'm glad that you're sharing your testimony because I'm sure there are others who can get out of it just like I'm getting a lot out of it. So I appreciate you for sharing your story in that, and my prayers are with you. That I guess did I miss how the situation resolved? I was listening about you being on the transplant list, and one of my friends just told me a couple of weeks ago that her husband now is on the kidney transplant. He needs a kidney transplant. So I guess a lot of it is going around. My own mother donated one of her kidneys to my great aunt.
Bless her heart.
Yeah. But she's passed since then, but it's been maybe like 10 or so years. But she added so much more to her life just by her doing that. She was able to come off dialysis, and we saw her color come back. So it was beautiful. It does happen. So I am praying for you. I don't know if the story got resolved. I'm still listening.
We're gonna let you hear the rest of the story. And Steve was about to tell us about getting his new heart. So why don't you listen and
Ooh,
be inspired a little bit more? And I know Steve will appreciate your prayers so much. We thank you for calling in.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Keep listening.
Yes, ma'am. I'm stuck
right
here. Right. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Steve, you were about to finish that story. We want that gentleman to hear the rest of your story because you are a very inspiring person. And
you
were placed on a heart transplant list finally, weren't you?
I was. 10 years later, I had to go through the same series of tests and meet with the same doctors and go through the same battery of lab results and all that. So I get placed on the heart transplant list. My psychologist that I have to meet with says, well, you know who gets on the heart transplant list first? I said, who? He said, those are the sickest. At that time, I put my hand up over my mouth and said, I said, write that down. So, anyway, in September, I'm placed on the heart transplant list. And then in November, I think I was telling you, we were headed to church. And Vicki said, well, you're hurting right now, aren't you? I said, I am. She said, well, how bad are you hurting? I said, I'm hurting bad enough to go to the hospital. So we go to the emergency room. I go straight back. And they run some tests on me. They said, well, Steve, you still have a problem with your congestive heart failure. This condition will continue to be chronic. We would like to put you at the top of the transplant list. So being at the top of the transplant list means that I'm at the top of the list at Baptist Hospital in Memphis for people that need a blood type A with certain enzymes and a certain size. But there are also other people on that same list from hospitals in Nashville, St. Louis, Little Rock, Dallas, Jackson, Mississippi, that are also waiting on a heart.
Yeah.
So they put a pulmonary artery line in, and for 2 weeks, I'm sitting there waiting on a heart. And they come in one morning and they said, well, we found a heart. I knew from a friend of mine that had been through this drill before. He had gone down for a dry run. In other words, they had taken him down, prepped him to get a heart, and then once they checked the heart, they looked at the back of it, and it was bruised. It wasn't the right heart. So, they tell me this at 9:30 in the morning, and then they come in about 1:30 in the afternoon, and they tell me it's a go. We're good to go at 4:30. We're gonna send you down. So that's when I went down for the heart transplant.
Well, so you received a new heart, and everything was going right, and then something went very wrong. What went wrong, Steve?
Well, from what I'm told, keep in mind I had my eyes closed through the whole thing.
Yeah, I hope so.
It was supposed to be a two-hour operation to replace my old heart with the new heart. From this lady in Georgia who had fallen down a flight of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
So this lady had signed up to be an organ donor on her driver's license, and I received her heart, and I've got a chance to live again. So I'm in there, and I lose all track of time. Next thing you know, I'm coming to, and they're telling me what happened, but apparently it was a 14-hour operation because they could not get me stabilized. I had what is called either an infarction or an ischemia in the spinal cord, which people kind of compare to as a stroke in the spinal cord.
Yeah.
So when they cut the blood flow off from the top and the bottom to put the heart in, the blood flow from the bottom was kind of closed too long. So it damaged some of the nerves in my legs, so now I'm paralyzed from the waist down. But the way I find out about this is they tell me, Mr. Collins, you can't. I'm kind of groggy, but I'm hearing doctors tell me you can't walk. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I just had a heart transplant, duh. And they said, well, you don't understand. Something went wrong, and you're paralyzed from the waist down.
Oh,
so it takes me a couple of days for this really to sink in, and the neurologist comes in and he does a series of tests, and I ask him a question. I said, well, should I prepare myself to not ever walk again? And he said, yes. Well, I heard that news after I'd heard from a physical therapist that said, well, you'll be walking again by next April. And again, this happened in November 11th of 2011, and the physical therapist said, oh, you'll be walking again by April. Somewhere between I'll be walking, in another 5 months to I won't ever walk again, that's where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, after I heard that news, I had a little pity party for 2 days, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to be able to walk again. Woe is me. And then I realized, you know what, I'm in that same place that I was when I moved to Slidell, Louisiana, my junior year of high school, and this is not fun. And people don't want to be around somebody like this. So I just snapped out of it and accepted it. I've never asked God why. Everything happens for a reason. So I accepted it. And, I mean, Sissy, we've known each other for a while, and you knew me before I went in.
I did. I knew you before. I knew you before. I worked with elections, and you were a trainer at the election commission, and I didn't even know you were ill. And the last thing I heard before you got so sick and went for the transplant was that you were riding a bike down the Green Line or something like that, and I just had no idea. And you were just such a funny man and such a good trainer, so you had a lot of activity in your life, so I know this was just a huge blow for you. But Steve, we're going to pause for just a few moments for a word from our sponsor to hear about the exciting Woods End series by author Alexandra Clare, and then we're going to come back and talk with Steve some more. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Great.
The Woods End series by Alexandra Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Shield as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Woods. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexandra Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexandraclare.com. LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome back to Reflecting His Gifts. We're talking tonight with Steve Collins, who is telling us about his experience in having a heart transplant. He was waiting on a new heart. He got his heart and ended up paralyzed from his waist down. And, you know, many of us get upset with God when things like this happen, when we lose our physical health or loved ones or jobs or finances. It's a normal reaction. And I believe God allows us to question him sometimes and feel that pain. But Steve was telling us that he decided in a couple of days, you know, that this was the way it was, and God was in control, and he resolved himself to just be happy. Steve, has that been a struggle for you at times to maintain that attitude?
No, I've always had a positive attitude. The point I was making before about us knowing each other before this happened, I have not changed. My personality has not changed at all. I'm still the same guy that I was beforehand. Would you agree?
I surely would. You're even a better guy. You're even funnier. So I would say that some things, like I was saying at the beginning of the program, all things work together for the good. And if you evolve from this in your sense of humor and your personality and your faith and everything, we're still intact and even more so. That is a wonderful testimony. It truly is. But what has life been like for you since then? How did your life change? I would imagine that it was a whole different world where you had to learn all kinds of new ways to maneuver and cope and feel and sleep and eat and all kinds of things. What's that been like?
You know, it's like anything new. You just have to get used to it. You have to get adjusted to it. You know, the big thing was I'm no longer able to walk, so that has affected so many things. I am in a wheelchair. Anytime I want to go someplace, I've got a power wheelchair at the house, and I can get in that, and I can go, you know, up to a mile or two down the road just in my chair, which is great because I can get to anything around where we lived, and there are so many things around here that are available just because of the location. But I need to back up a little bit because I had gone through a divorce in 2001 and was looking for a new place to live, and I had a contract on a house in Midtown that I just, you know, all my emotions were just all up in the air because of this divorce, and I had this house that I could look forward to, and I knew I was going to move into this house. It was built in 1920. It was gutted on the inside and refurbished, so it was an old house on the outside, a new house on the inside, and that was going to be my house. And I was just, that all of my hopes and dreams and goals were in that house. Mm-hmm. Well, the next thing you know, there's a first right of refusal that comes by. We exercised our right, and the next thing you know, my real estate agent did not put in the paperwork. We gave him the verbal okay, but not the paperwork okay, so I lost the house. I lost the house. I lost a real estate agent and a friend who was the real estate agent. And I was so angry because that's where I was going to live.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the place for me to live. Had I had I closed on that house, I would have been in a different location of town that would not have been as easily accessible to the bus line, easily accessible to the University of Memphis. God knew what he was doing when he took that house away from him.
He did, didn't he? He was looking out for you, actually, because
he
knew what you would need on up the road. Well, Steve, I know your sweet and precious wife, Vicki. She is absolutely one of the most precious people I've ever met. And I know you had only been married to her a short while when this happened, your heart transplant and the paralysis. How did this affect your marriage?
Well, funny thing, Sissy. When we met, there was chemistry. We met in Sunday school class, and you know, I asked her out to my company Christmas party that year, and then we just started dating. And you know, I loved her when we were dating, and I loved her enough to ask her to marry her. I loved her while we were engaged. I loved her when we got married. I loved her when we were married. But being able to love somebody in a situation where you have to take care of them, that brings love to a whole different level.
Yes, I know it has.
It is so much different. You know, you've got the romantic love, and, you know, that stays and it fades, and you know, you go into a different place, but we are so much happier now than we were before.
Isn't that the most wonderful thing? That is the most wonderful part of this testimony just about to me, because it seemed God not only changed you as you submitted to your hardship, he changed your wife as well as she adjusted to this whole new world. But it seems you both submitted and turned this trial into so many blessings. And I know Vicki is truly committed to you. She loves you so much, to God and to your marriage. Did you ever fear that this would change everything and negatively affect your relationship?
You know, when I was in the hospital, just, you know, a couple weeks after, it crossed my mind, you know, well, why would she stay with me? Why would she want to have to take care of me? There were so many things that I was able to do, and now there's so many things I'm not able to do. I had to learn to give up that independence and let other people do for me. Which, I mean, it's hard for
any
guy.
That can be very hard, can it?
So hard. And it's something I still struggle with. I don't want to be a burden to others. I want to do as much as I can. I've got to tell you that when I first got the wheelchair and wanted to, you know, veer out around my little one-mile radius circle, I was riding the Mata Plus bus, the bus system here in town, will allow me to take a bus from here to a doctor's appointment, and then they'll drop me off door to door. But the service wasn't very good, and you know, the rates were a little bit higher than I wanted to pay. But once I found out that the city bus had lifts on them, that has just changed my whole life, being able to travel around town. I've got a bus pass, and I travel all over the city, and that has been so freeing for me and giving me a lot more independence. Vicki and I still go places at night, and she drives me, and we go out, and you know, she pulls the wheelchair out of the trunk, and we wheel places where we need to go. But I can also go places that I want to go when she's at work during the day.
Right, right. Well, how has it made you feel? And I would think this is the most wonderful feeling in the world to know that someone loves you so very much, to be by your side constantly and to love you even though. That must be one of the most comforting and wonderful feelings on earth, to have that kind of love.
It is unbelievable. I can't even put it into words. I appreciate her so much. But, you know, I appreciate my family, too. My family's gone above and beyond to make things work for me and accommodations and give me rides when I need rides and doing things that I can't do anymore. So it's just there's love all around, Sissy.
It's just the sweetest thing I ever saw. And I've seen Vicky just turn into the most, I don't know how to describe it. You would think some people would, you know, well, you know what, Steve, we always have a choice to become bitter and ugly in our trials and hardships, or to become beautiful and a trophy of God's grace through those hardships. And I think both of you have had such a wonderful attitude and have been so committed, and you haven't stopped living, and you've even found love at a deeper, more meaningful level than some people probably ever will, you know, because you know that she loves you, even though anyhow, through anything, she's stayed with you and you have stayed with her. I mean, you could have given up too and said, just go on. I want to be by myself. But you've clung together, and I think that is one of the most beautiful relationships.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, tell us some of the life lessons you've learned from this trial. How's it changed you, and how's it changed Vicky? What are some of the most important things that you have learned through all of this?
Well, as Vicky tells me now, that when I say thank you to people, I mean it more.
Yeah, you probably do.
I'm sure I do. I'm sure I do. I appreciate people. I talk to a lot more people now than I used to talk to, Sissy, and the people I'm talking to are the bus drivers, the people on the bus, the people around the University of Memphis that are the custodians. I talk to them because nobody talks to them. It's funny. I'll be riding along in my wheelchair, and there will be people that will ask if they can help me, and if I need help, I'll ask them for help, and if I don't, I thank them for asking. But there's a lot of people that just ignore me because I'm in a wheelchair. Well, I'm not invisible, and some of these people that I'm talking to, you would think they were invisible as well, but that's one thing I've learned, to appreciate everybody.
Yeah, it's like pain and trials take you to a whole nother level, and they give you a whole nother viewpoint of life. I know when I've suffered in my life, it suddenly gave me vision to see similar suffering. And I know you've become an advocate for others who are in similar situations as yours. How do you reach out to others who may be paralyzed in experiencing what you've experienced?
Well, there is a support group here in Memphis called AID, Achieving Independence Daily, and it is a support group for folks with spinal cord injuries, and I meet with them, and we talk about just the trials and tribulations, what our victories were since we last met. It's a monthly meeting that meets over at the University of Memphis, and that is one way. The other way is I have some problems getting around town in the wheelchair because of the sidewalks and the curb cuts. So I am kind of a rallying advocate for that. But I don't really see that as just being selfish and fighting for me. I'm fighting for you when you get in a wheelchair, or the guy that gets hit by a bus tomorrow and has to walk with a walker. You know, people that will be eventually handicapped, and I'm fighting for everybody like that. I don't want people to pity me because I'm in a wheelchair. You should envy me because I'm an early adopter.
Yes. Yes. And see, this has made you aware of those challenges. You would have never, if you had been upright walking just like you always walked and healthy, living the life you used to live, you would have probably never noticed curbs that were dangerous to people or those challenges in finding handicapped accessible entrances and those obstacles and non-compliances that you've encountered. You probably would not have noticed those, would you?
You're exactly right, Sissy. I wouldn't. Things you kind of take for granted. If you're upright and you're walking, yeah. You don't notice. I mean, if there's a curb, you just step over it. But if you're in a wheelchair, you're not able to. I've had to go out into the street before because there was a sidewalk that was buckled so bad that I thought the New Madrid Fault had run through it.
Mm-hmm. And probably because you are very outspoken, and when you encounter something like that, you will absolutely say something about it. So you might really be saving someone else from a terrible accident. Yes, I'm sure you are. And I'm sure probably somewhere along the way, if you haven't already, you may encounter someone who has an attitude about their paralysis where they need to be lifted up. They might be bitter. They might have given up. But with your attitude, you would be able to probably counsel them in some way to see the bright side of the situation. Have you had any of those kinds of encounters?
I have, Sissy. I went down for a rehab stint at Jackson Methodist Hospital in Jackson, Mississippi, a couple of years ago, and there were a lot of people in there that were paraplegics. They specialized, there's a floor there that specialized specifically in spinal cord injuries. Wonderful people down there, wonderful staff, wonderful nurses. I'll never forget those people. But along with that, there were people there that were not adjusting to their situation. And I was able to talk to some of those folks and realize at the same time, I'm in a lot better situation than a lot of those people are. And I could see where people don't want to be around somebody who's got a bad attitude or is complaining all the time.
Right,
so that's helped me out quite a bit. And I'll have people that will just talk to me, their friends that are saying, you know, Steve, my arm hurts or, you know, I sprained my ankle, but it's nothing like what you have. But I tell them, you know, you can't compare injuries. Whatever's at the top of your agenda is at the top of your agenda, and you've got to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't compare things. But, you know, I guess I inspire people just by keeping on with life and, you know, keeping a good attitude, and I'm happy to do that.
And you do, and that's one of the most important things to be able to share with other people is a good attitude and a good outlook, and that's a real gift that you have there. Well, you know what? What has been one of the worst things that's happened to you in your condition, and how did you handle it, a fall or an embarrassment or whatever it might have been? What was the worst thing that's happened?
Well, I have been hit by a car 5 times in my wheelchair.
Oh, no.
One time I had to go to the hospital to get my foot x-rayed. They thought it was broken. And this is from a lady that just ran over my foot. She had a red light. I was crossing, and she crossed right in front of me, and her back tire ran over my foot. And
she just left.
Yeah. And then I've never been, you know, crashed into, but I have been hit.
Did it break your foot? What did it do to your foot?
No, it made it swell up, and they were surprised that it wasn't broken. But you know, I had to stay off of it for a couple. Yeah, stay off your feet for a couple days. Right.
Did you even feel that? You didn't feel that, did you?
I didn't, because I don't have feelings below my waist. So, and Vicky got on me. She said, well, you should have gone to the emergency room or had the ambulance come and check you out, because you don't know, you know, what happened to you or what.
Right.
So,
right.
Anyway, I went to physical therapy, and they would not treat me that day because I needed to go to the doctor to get x-rays. So, anyway, I had that done.
Yeah.
Another time I got hit, and it caused about $1,500 damage to my wheelchair. We had to get that fixed. And most recently, this past Sunday, I was in the shower,
I heard about this one.
And,
yep, I did. What happened?
I was in the shower, and my wash rag starts to fall off the rail, so the first thing I thought was, I need to catch that wash rag before it falls. Well, yeah. I didn't realize that in reaching for the wash rag, that my momentum was going to carry me forward, and I ended up smack on the floor, and we ended up having to call the fire department to come out and pick me up and put me back in the wheelchair.
Oh, bless your heart. Oh, no. Oh, well. It's all just part of it, isn't it?
It is.
You never know what's going to happen, but you seem to make a joke out of it and make light of it and just keep going. I love that about you. And you know what? Listeners, he still comes to the Election Commission to help us out at elections. In his wheelchair, he sits there and helps out any way he can, so he hasn't even stopped doing that. And Steve, I know you've pursued an ongoing college education. What have you been studying, and where, and why are you doing that?
Well, like I told you, I went to college back in the late 70s to get a degree to get a job. And that's why I went, and, you know, it was good. I had fun. I got an education. One of the things that happened after I had my heart transplant, I came out of it, and I had a business that I'd started called One Sharp Dude. I was sharpening knives and scissors and garden tools, whatever. And I'd had that business for 5 years, and once I get out of the hospital, I realized I can't do all that I was doing before. So I had to sell off most of that business.
Mm-hmm.
So that left kind of a hole in my life. Well, what am I going to do now? So I found out that with my disability, I can go back to college on the student disability ticket, and I can take as many courses as I want each semester for $70.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So it was kind of a no-brainer. Well, I told my advisor that, look, I went before to get a degree. I'm coming back now to learn. And he said, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. So I've been taking music courses and film courses. And it's been an amazing journey. It's been wonderful in that the college kids accept me as one of them.
Yes.
And it's been a beautiful experience. I am learning so much, and I guess I'm going to get out in about a year with a degree in film.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Who would have thought it? I mean, would you have thought that?
Well,
would take this turn and that you would be getting a degree in film. I mean, that's really something.
I had lunch with my mom and dad about a couple years ago after this happened, and they said, Steve, we're real proud of the way you're handling this. And I said, well, how did you think I was going to handle it? They said, well, you know, we don't really know, and nobody really knows until you're faced with it.
Right.
But my dad said, well, I wouldn't have played. I'd have turned over. And if you knew my dad, you know he would have turned over. But, you know, part of it is the fact that we've got different personalities, and part of the fact that I guess I was 54 when this happened, and he was 74. So age might have had something to do with it. But, you know, I don't know any other way to deal with it, so this is how I deal with it.
Yeah. Well, what about your goals for the future, Steve? What do you want to happen in your future, and what are some of your dreams? Because obviously you haven't given up on trying and pursuing new things. So where do you see yourself in just a few years? What would you like to be doing?
Well, I'd like to be walking.
I know.
I have.
And it could happen. I mean, I'm not going to say that couldn't, but, you know,
well,
other dreams that you have too?
There are, but I want to talk about this for a minute because there is a guy in Clearwater, Florida, who he's a licensed massage therapist and a reflexologist. His name is Ken Bryant. He runs Bryant Alternative Health. And he has been able to restore muscle movement to spinal cord injury patients and stroke patients, and he has had success with 660 patients in a row. So I've been in contact with him, and the plans are to go to Clearwater, Florida to meet with him and have him work with me.
Now, oh, I think that's wonderful. I think that's absolutely wonderful. And there are other people that I know who are really believing for a healing, you know, in family members and people who have kind of the same circumstance as you. And that is always possible. And I'll be praying for that. I think you should pursue that because we should never give up, you know, on those kinds of things.
And he has the spiritual gift of healing, Sissy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is not surgery or anything. This is strictly a gift he has.
Well, I believe that. I believe that with all my heart, and I'm so happy for you that you're gonna pursue that. Because, I mean, I believe you can walk again. I believe in miracles. I really, really do. I've seen too many in my lifetime, so I will believe with you for that. I surely will. I know this whole experience, has it brought you closer to God, closer to others and to your wife? Has it taught you a deeper compassion for those who suffer? What has this taught you, the best lesson of all?
The best lesson, I guess, is that everybody is broken. And you have to accept what your troubles are, and you have to embrace what powers you have. And use those to your best ability.
Right. And you can. I mean, it is a choice. You know, we do have a choice to do that. Well, Steve, what would you say to someone tonight who has had a very disappointing and disabling turn in their lives? Can you encourage someone tonight who maybe has found themselves in a similar situation as yours and just say a few words to someone who may be listening?
Certainly. We are all given trials and tribulations, and God's never going to give you anything bigger than you can handle. You may think it is, but it's not. You just have to learn how to handle it. You know, pray about it, face it, face it head on. The difference between being a hero in your own story and being a victim in your own story is your attitude. If you decide to wallow in self-pity and decide you're not going to be able to do anything, then you won't be able to do anything. Right. But if you face it and you say, look, Lord, thank you for what you've given me. I'm going to do the best with what I have and go on about your life, then you will be the hero.
And you were so right about that. I've learned we have all kinds of emotional appendages inside of us that we never ever utilize until we have to, and then when we have to, it's like these coping skills and these attitudes and these things we have inside will come to life, and we begin to use them. It's like they're in reserve in there, and we can choose to use them, and we can dog paddle around a little bit, or we can begin to do a breaststroke in our spirits and in our emotions like you have. And I would say that although you were paralyzed from the waist down, you've learned to do a spectacular high dive and a breaststroke in your situation. And I so admire you. I just love you so much, and I love your wife too. And I'm going to cry, I think, in a minute. But Steve, where can our guests learn more about you? I understand there's a video and a story about you circulating around now. How can people read about you and see your video?
Well, a friend of mine at the University of Memphis and a fellow film student did an interview with me for a class project, and that is on my blog at stevecollinsfunny.com.
Mm-hmm.
I also have some other stories on there about my run-ins with people and just kind of some funny stories about a guy in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Well, you've just really made this into something almost beautiful, I would say. And we've come to the close of another wonderful program with this wonderful guest. I've been so inspired by Steve Collins. And we all have our trials and tribulations. Maybe they're not like Steve's, but what strikes me about Steve is his ongoing drive to live, his passion for life and humor and music and all his attempts to overcome this hardship and even to work with it. I know you've been encouraged and inspired as well, and may we all learn to accept our trials and hardships and disappointments in life as valiantly and beautifully as Steve Collins. Be sure and join me again next week for another program when I talk with another inspiring guest. Till then, may God keep you in his tender care. Good night, Steve, and thank you for being on our show. And good night, listeners.
Thank you, Sissy. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you.
The Woods End Series by Alexander Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Shield as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Wood. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexander Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexanderclare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.